One of the least understood events in the Song of Ice and Fire happens right in the opening chapter of the series. Waymar Royce, a lordling from the Vale, and the two rangers Will and Garrett are hunting wildling raiders in the haunted forest. Before you can even get your bearings, Waymar is ambushed by the icy demons known as the Others. Waymar utters his famous and incredibly badass line, "Dance with me then," and begins their duel. Waymar holds his own until the Other lands a hit, then mocks the ranger, and finally Waymar's sword shatters against the blade of ice. A shard punctures Waymar's eye, and the waiting group of Others close in and finish off the wounded man in one coordinated stab. To add insult to injury, Waymar is raised as a wight and slaughters his former companion, Will. Their other brother, Garrett, escapes the attack and flees south until he reaches a holdfast near Winterfell before being caught and executed by Ned Stark for deserting his watch. It's a prologue that leaves readers with many unanswered questions about what they just read. Why were these rangers attacked? And by so many of the Others? Where were their undead servants they normally use for their killing? And why were they dueling Waymar Royce in particular, a ranger of no particular note on his first mission? First, let's look at Waymar's background.
Sir Waymar Royce was the youngest son of an ancient house with too many heirs. He was a handsome youth of 18, gray-eyed and graceful and slender as a knife. Mounted on his huge black destrier, the knight towered above Will and Garrett on their smaller garrons. He wore black leather boots, black woolen pants, black moleskin gloves, and a fine, supple coat of gleaming black ringmail over layers of black wool and boiled leather. Sir Waymar had been a sworn brother of the Night's Watch for less than half a year, but no one could say he had not prepared for his vocation, at least insofar as his wardrobe was concerned.
Expanding on the information, Waymar was the third son of the formidable Bronze Jan Royce, Lord of Runestone and House Royce. No one is really sure why Waymar chose to join the Watch. As the son of a lord, he could marry into a lesser house and get his own holdings, become a tourney knight, tour Essos, and fight as a sellsword if he liked, almost anything. Instead, he chose to join the Night's Watch. Waymar is very handsome. Sansa Stark fell in love with him on sight.
He was a guest at Winterfell when his son rode north to take the Black. She had fallen wildly in love with Sir Waymar, she remembered dimly.
Garrett and Will are slightly less illustrious. Will is a poacher caught by Lord Malister and chose the Wall over losing his hand. Garrett joined the Watch as a boy and has been a ranger for 40 years. Lord Commander Mormont speaks of them highly.
Mormont scarcely seemed to hear him. The old man warmed his hands before the fire. I sent Benjen Stark to search after Jan Royce's son, lost on his first ranging. The Royce boy was green as summer grass, yet he insisted on the honor of his own command, saying it was his due as a knight. I did not wish to offend his lord father, so I yielded. I sent him out with two men I deemed as good as any in the Watch. More fool I.
Now that we're more familiar with these rangers, let's address the most simple explanation: that it was an accidental meeting between the Others and the Rangers. Perhaps the Others were traveling through the woods to meet with Craster and accidentally came upon three Rangers. Makes sense, the Others and the Rangers are historic enemies. There are major problems with this, however. The first is that when Royce and his company catch up with their prey, the raiders have already been turned into wights.
Did you make note of the position of the bodies? Will shrugged. A couple are sitting up against the rock, most of them on the ground, fallen-like. Or sleeping, Royce suggested. Fallen, Will insisted. There's one woman up an ironwood, half hid in the branches. Far Eyes smiled thinly. I took care that she never saw me. When I got closer, I saw that she wasn't moving, neither. Despite himself, he shivered. You have a chill? Royce asked. Some, Will muttered. The wind, my lord. The young knight turned back to his grizzled man-at-arms. Frostfallen leaves whispered past them, and Royce's destrier moved restlessly. What do you think might have killed these men, Garrett? Sir Waymar asked casually. He adjusted the drape of his long sable cloak. "It was the cold," Garrett said, with iron certainty. "I saw men freeze last winter, and the one before, when I was half a boy."
Waymar notices something wrong with Garrett's assessment. It has been unseasonably warm recently, so much so that the wall has been melting, or quote-unquote, weeping.
"If Garrett said it was the cold," Will began. "Have you drawn any watches this past week, Will?" "Yes, my lord. There was never a week when he did not draw a dozen bloody watches. What was the man driving at? And how did you find the wall?" "Weeping," Will said, frowning. He saw it clear enough, now that the lordling had pointed it out. "It couldn't have froze. Not if the wall was weeping. It wasn't cold enough." Royce nodded. "Right, lad. We've had a few light frosts this past week, in a quick flurry of snow now and then, but surely no cold fierce enough to kill 8 grown men."
The raiders are frozen to death in weather that was far too warm. As the audience, we know that the others have supernatural control over the cold, showing them as the killers. And then, when Waymar and Will go back, they discover the bodies have disappeared.
His heart stopped in his chest. For a moment, he dared not breathe. Moonlight shone down on the clearing, the ashes of the fire pit, the snow-covered lean-to, the great rock, the little half-frozen stream. Everything was just as it had been a few hours ago.
The curious Waymar takes the bait and the trap has been sprung. Will, from his vantage point up a tree, sees their unknown predators emerge from the woods.
A shadow emerged from the dark of the wood. It stood in front of Royce. Tall it was, and gaunt, and hard as old bones, with flesh pale as milk. Its armor seemed to change color as it moved. Here it was white as new-fallen snow, there black as shadow, everywhere dappled with the gray-green of the trees. Patterns ran like moonlight on water with every step it took. Will heard the breath go out of Sir Waymar Royce in a long hiss. They emerged silently from the shadows, twins to the first. 3 of them. 4. 5. Sir Waymar may have felt the cold that came with them, but he never saw them, never heard them. Will had to call out. It was his duty, and his death if he did. He shivered and hugged the tree and kept the silence.
The others set a trap for these rangers and executed it. It wasn't a chance encounter. Are they just trying to kill all the Night's Watch members they can? I don't believe so. Will and Waymar are killed in the haunted forest, but the third crow, Garrett, is allowed to escape by the others. There are 6 uninjured, camouflaged, and eager to kill others right there, with at least 10 whites after raising Will and Waymar, and they neglect to chase down Garrett. Killing him would be easy and quick, and yet they don't. Were they destroying for ranger body counts? This doesn't happen. The only conclusion left is that the whole scenario is not a trap for 3 Night's Watch rangers. Instead, a trap for 1 ranger in particular, Waymar Royce. He is singled out by the others for a one-on-one duel for his life. But why? Waymar isn't anything special in the Watch. He's on his first ranging, meanwhile Garrett and Will are veterans beyond the wall. They would be the greater prizes tactically. How could the others even know to target Waymar? You'll forgive me if you've read some of my other theories, but once again, the answer is Craster. Waymar, Will, and Garrett stop for at least 1 night at Craster's keep while tracking the wildling raiders.
Lord Mormont said, "Ben was searching for Sir Waymar Royce, who'd vanished with Garrett and young Will. Aye, those 3 I recall. The lordling no older than one of these pups. Too proud to sleep under my roof. Him in his sable cloak and black steel. My wives give him big cow eyes all the same." He turned his squint on the nearest of the women. "Garrett says they were chasing raiders. I told him, with a commander that green, best not catch them. Garrett wasn't half bad for a crow."
Notice here that Craster only talks about Garrett and Waymar, not Will. And Will's a veteran ranger, someone Craster probably would have met before, but is left out. Craster recalls Waymar acutely, focusing on his fine clothing and good looks. Craster focused hard on Waymar, but when asked about where the rangers were heading when they left, Craster replies,
"When Sir Waymar left you, where was he bound?" Craster gave a shrug. "Happens I have better things to do than tend to the comings and goings of crows."
Craster has no better things to do. His days revolve around getting drunk and being an awful human to his quote-unquote wives. And he contradicted himself, claiming no interest in the Rangers while rattling off precise details of Royce. Given Craster's very close relationship with the others, arranging a deal that he gives his sons to them in exchange for protection, this chance meeting is what began the chain of events leading to Waymar's death. Craster saw something important in Waymar Royce, something that the others paid huge attention to and acted on in a dramatic fashion. Let's go over quickly what Craster could have learned. From his own words, he notices that Waymar is highborn. Not particularly valuable information. There are many highborn rangers and members of the Watch, and the others haven't set individual traps for them as far as we know. He could have learned Waymar was from House Royce in the Vale. There are no other men from Royce's in the Watch, but there is another ranger named Tim Stone from the Vale. Tim survives the Great Ranging and is still alive at the end of a feast for crows, so it seems like an unlikely explanation. Perhaps being a Royce made the others stand at attention. The Royces are first men, an ancient house stretching back into the shadows of history. Maybe some kind of grudge. Is there something in his behavior? Waymar's haughty and self-confident puts people off with his superior attitude. That annoyed Craster, however I doubt the others would arrive in force to settle a mild annoyance from their baby factory manager. How far they go for Waymar implies that what Craster told them was juicy, important information that set them off in a big way. What's left is Waymar's appearance.
"He was a handsome youth of 18, gray-eyed and graceful and slender as a knife."
Gray eyes, slender, graceful. This is a description that is used only a chapter later for a very famous character.
"John's eyes were a gray so dark they seemed almost black, but there was little they did not see. He was of an age with Rob. They did not look alike. John was slender where Rob was muscular, dark where Rob was fair, graceful and quick where his half-brother was strong and fast."
Waymar resembles Jon Snow. The other known members of House Royce that haven't gone gray, Miranda Royce and her thick chestnut curls, and Albar Royce and his fierce black side whiskers, have black or brown hair. Stands to reason that Waymar would as well, giving the dominance of dark hair in families. The official art from the calendars back this up, with Gurm approving Waymar's black hair. Craster doesn't know Jon Snow at this time, so why does this comparison matter? The answer comes from Craster's first interaction with Jon Snow.
"Who's this one now?" Craster said before Jon could go. "He has the look of a Stark." "My steward and squire, Jon Snow." "A bastard, is it?" Craster looked Jon up and down. "And wants to bed a woman. Seems like he ought to take her to wife. That's what I do." He shooed Jon off with a wave. "Well, run and do your service, bastard. See that axe is good and sharp now. I've no use for dull steel."
Craster, at one glance, correctly recognizes Jon as having the looks of a Stark. He doesn't pull this trick with anyone else he meets in the POV chapters. No one mentions it afterwards. This is the one time Craster says someone looks like a particular family. He knows what Starks are supposed to look like and is confirmed by other characters. One of their defining features, brought up many times, is their gray eyes. Catelyn remembering Brandon Stark.
"And her betrothed looked at her with the cool gray eyes of a Stark and promised to spare the boy who loved her."
Jaime Lannister remembering Ned Stark from the Rebellion.
"He remembered Eddard Stark, writhing the length of Aerys' throne room, wrapped in silence. Only his eyes had spoken, Lord's eyes, cold and gray, and full of judgment.
Even Theon recalling what Arya should look like.
Arya had her father's eyes, the gray eyes of the Starks. A girl her age might let her hair grow long, add inches to her height, see her chest fill out, but she could not change the color of her eyes.
And Tyrion Lannister recognizes Jon as having the Stark look as well.
The boy absorbed that all in silence. He had the Stark face, if not the name. Long, solemn, guarded, a face that gave nothing away.
By the correct recognition from Craster, Tyrion, Theon, and Catelyn, looking like a quote-unquote true Stark means you must have gray eyes, dark brown or black hair, and a long, solemn face. Waymar Royce is 3 for 4 on those. However, he could be 4 for 4 if you take his father's face as indicative as what Waymar's face likely looked like.
Last of all came the Royces, Lord Nestor and Bronn's Yawn. The Lord of Runestone stood as tall as the Hound. Though his hair was gray and his face lined, Lord Yawn still looked as though he could break most younger men like twigs in those huge, gnarled hands. His seamed and solemn face brought back all of Sansa's memories of his time at Winterfell.
The same solemn face you'd look for is looking like a Stark. His face even reminds her of Winterfell and presumably her father. I believe this is what Craster saw in Waymar and alerted the others about. He had seen somebody that looks a lot like a Stark, highborn, and young. This fits an important profile for the others as they spring into action, setting a trap for Waymar. Unfortunately, Waymar is not an actual Stark, but he appears close enough to fool Craster and the others. However, Craster is not entirely wrong about Waymar being looking like a Stark. The Starks and the Royces have intermarried recently. Baron Stark, Jon's great-great-great-grandfather, married Laura Royce. And their grandchild, Jocelyn Stark, daughter of William Stark and Melantha Blackwood, married Benedict Royce of the Gates of the Moon. From Catelyn, we learn of where in the Vale their children married.
Your father's father had no siblings, but his father had a sister who married a younger son of Lord Raymar Royce of the Junior Branch. They had 3 daughters, all of whom wed Vale lordlings, a Wainwood and a Corbray for certain. The youngest might have been a Templeton, but...
This is the wrong branch of House Royce. However, their daughters all married into other noble families, making it conceivable that the Stark blood found its way into the main branch of the family, and eventually Waymar, through political marriages we know are common. We know very little about the Royce family tree beyond the current members. We don't even know the name or house of Jon Royce's wife. It's my conclusion that Waymar Royce was killed by the others by accident on incorrect information from their Stark recognizing scout Craster. In my video, The Wild Wolves, The Children of Brandon Stark, I propose that Waymar may actually be a secret Stark bastard in House Royce. There's a fair amount of connections between the Wild Wolf himself and Waymar, particularly their bravery and their seeking of adventure. That theory being true would strengthen the reasoning behind the other's attack on Waymar, as he may be a Stark in all but name. You can imagine as Waymar, Will, and Garrod were riding through the Haunted Forest, the others silently following, inspecting Waymar from afar, and growing excited that they had found who they were looking for. Perhaps they could smell the wolf's blood in him. Waymar was essentially killed for not being the right guy, but from the trap and the situation the others crafted, we can figure out who they were expecting to find. First off, they set an elaborate trap using whites to fool the Rangers. From this, we can reason out that they were expecting their target to be very cautious and intelligent, otherwise they just could have found them at night and snuck up for the kill. They believed they needed to trap the Stark they were hunting. Second, the number of others that show up. 6 others show up, a huge amount for them for a race that are seemingly expert swordsmen. Later on in the story, the others only send 1 to kill at least 3 Night's Watch members before Sam kills it with an obsidian dagger. For Waymar, they send 6. If you wanted someone to watch the duel, you send an extra 1 or 2 others. An extra 5 implies the person you're going to be dueling is going to be wildly successful. You're anticipating that this person is likely to kill several others before the fight is over. They fear and respect him. However, they discover these assumptions are not true. First, they check out Waymar's sword when he raises it, almost out of fear.
Sir Waymar met him bravely. Dance with me, then. He lifted his sword high over his head, defiant. His hands trembled from the weight of it, or perhaps from the cold. Yet in that moment, Will thought, he was a boy no longer, but a man of the Night's Watch. The other halted. Will saw it in his eyes, blue. Deeper and bluer than any human eyes, a blue that burned like ice. He fixed on the longsword, trembling on high, watched the moonlight running cold along the metal. For a heartbeat, he dared to hope.
When they are satisfied the sword is not about to burst into flames like Lightbringer, they move on and test his skills with the blade.
Then Royce's parry came a beat too late. The pale sword bit through the ringmail beneath his arm. The young lord cried out in pain. Blood welled between the rings. It steamed in the cold, and the droplets seemed red as fire where they touched the snow. Sir Waymar's fingers brushed his side. His moleskin glove came away, soaked with red. The other said something in a language that Will did not know. His voice was like the crackling of ice on a winter lake, and the words were mocking.
The others land a hit. You can almost hear what they are saying. Isn't this guy supposed to be an amazing fighter? Then they execute another test.
The blades touched, the steel shattered. A scream echoed through the forest night, and the long sword shivered into 100 brittle pieces. Shards scattering like a rain of needles. Royce went to his knees, shrieking, and covered in blood. Blood welled between his fingers. Watchers moved forward together, as if some signal had been given. Swords rose and fell, all in deathly silence. It was cold butchery. The pale blade sliced through the ringmail as if it were silk. Will closed his eyes. Far beneath him, he heard their voices and laughter, sharp as icicles.
The signal of Waymar's death is that his sword shatters in the cold. They are expecting Waymar to have a sword that will resist their cold attacks, Valyrian steel at the least. When his sword doesn't, they are convinced that Waymar isn't who they want and butcher him. It's worth paying close attention to how odd these behaviors are based on how the others attack, as evidenced later on in the story. In the attack of the Fist of the First Men, there are no others cited. They exclusively use whites. Similarly, their use of whites to chase Sam and Gilly from the mutiny at Craster's Keep. When Sam kills one with his obsidian dagger, only one other considers itself an easy match for three men of the Night's Watch. In the attempt to kill J.R. Mormont and Jeremy Riker, the mission is given to two whites alone. They operate like wraiths, killing in the shadows in their icy camouflage and letting their puppets do their dirty work, but here, they totally abandon that stealthy behavior. This implies that this was incredibly important for them, and the setup feels like a ritual or a ceremony of some sort. There's one more thing that the others have their eyes trained on. After Waymar receives his wound, his blood starts trickling out into his glut and then bleeds openly from his side. What's been happening so far? Could this be a case of stark misidentification by Craster? This detail, however, gives us a very different picture. This tells us they are looking for Jon Snow without knowing his name. Let me explain. At the end of A Dance with Dragons, Jon is slain by his Night's Watch brothers and feels the chill of death upon him. In the TV show, Jon is resurrected by Melisandre, basically the same as he was before, with some gnarly scars. The same for Beric Dondarrion, whose own return from death serves as priming the audience for Jon. In an interview with Time magazine, George tells a very different story about how Beric's body works.
Poor Beric Dondarrion, who was set up as the foreshadowing of all this. Every time, he's a little less Beric. His memories are fading, he's got all these scars, he's becoming more and more physically hideous, because he's not a living human being anymore. His heart isn't beating, his blood isn't flowing in his veins, he's a white, but a white animated by fire instead of by ice. Now we're getting back to the whole fire and ice thing.
This is close to what the character known as Cold Hands tells Bran, who has this to say about his own version of undeath and about how his body has fared.
The ranger studied his hands as if he had never noticed them before. Once the heart has ceased to beat, man's blood runs down into his extremities, where it thickens and congeals. His voice rattled in his throat, as thin and gaunt as he was. His hands and feet swell up and turn black as pudding. The rest of him becomes as white as milk.
What we're being shown is that after resurrection, the bodies of these people are being held in a state of suspended animation. They do not pump blood anymore. They rarely need food or sleep. They may not even age. When the blood pumps warm and hot out of Waymar's side, the others can see he is not undead, as John likely will be in the coming books. Add up all these hints. They are looking for a sword that's resistant to their magic, surely Valyrian steel, like the sword Longclaw Jon Snow wields. They want a young man with the dark hair, long facial features, and gray eyes of a Stark. Again, dead ringer for Jon Snow. They want someone whose blood no longer flows hot. This gives us a timestamp for when in Jon's future they are looking for him, post his death and resurrection at the Wall. How could this be? How could the others even know who Jon is, what he looks like? Why is he important for them? The key is that the others were made by the Children of the Forest, and all the symbolic and descriptive language around them points that they come from and draw power from the Weirwoods. And we know what that means. Green sight and green dreams, or ice sight. Similar to what we see from characters like Bran, Jojen, Melisandre, Patchface, and more. Access into a dream world without time that has highly symbolic features. As an example, this is how Jojen interprets Bran in his dreams.
Jojen's eyes were the color of moss, and sometimes when he looked at you, he seemed to be seeing something else. Like now. I dreamed of a winged wolf bound to earth with some gray stone chains, he said. It was a green dream, so I know it was true. A crow was trying to peck through the chains, but the stone was too hard, and his beak could only chip at them.
The uncertain nature of the world of green dreams makes it perfectly understandable how the others could mistake Waymar for Jon. They may have only seen him in flashes, his face obscured, his name unknown, his exact time frame uncertain. Remember how much trouble the Targaryens, Valyrians, Melisandre, and many others have had trying to guess when the prince that was promised would arrive, interpreting the bleeding star born amidst salt and smoke creatively throughout their history. The others may be doing the same thing with who they see in their future, and there's one dream in particular that may terrify them. Jon's dream.
Burning shafts hissed upward, trailing tongues of fire. Scarecrow brothers tumbled down, black cloaks ablaze. Snow! An eagle cried as foemen scuttled up the ice like spiders. Jon was armored in black ice, but his blade burned red in his fist. As the dead men reached the top of the wall, he sent them down to die again. He slew a graybeard and a beardless boy, a giant, a gaunt man with filed teeth, a girl with thick red hair. Too late, he recognized Ygritte. She was gone as quick as she'd appeared. The world dissolved into a red mist. Jon stabbed and slashed and cut. He hacked down Donald Noy and gutted deaf Dick Follard. Corrin Halfhand stumbled to his knees, trying in vain to staunch the flow of blood from his neck. I am the Lord of Winterfell, Jon screamed. It was Robb before him now. His hair wet with melting snow. Longclaw took his head off.
Jon, clad in ice armor, wielding a flaming sword, single-handedly fighting back the hordes of the undead, killing again and again his own family and loved one and brothers. Such a person would undoubtedly be a problem for the others. Or they may have seen Melisandre's equally terrifying vision of Jon.
The flames crackled softly. And in their crackling, she heard the whispered name Jon Snow. His long face floated before her. limned in tongues of red and orange, appearing and disappearing again, a shadow half seen behind a fluttering curtain. Now he was a man, now a wolf, now a man again, but the skulls were here as well. The skulls were all around him.
John and Waymar also embody classic traits of the last hero, the person who somehow ended the long night. Waymar even seems excited when he realizes the raiders may have been slain by the others. From old Nan,
the last hero determined to seek out the children, in the hopes that their ancient magics could win back what the armies of men had lost. He set out into the dead lands with a sword, a horse, a dog, and a dozen companions. For years he searched until he despaired of ever finding the children of the forest in their secret cities. One by one his friends died, and his horse, and finally even his dog, and his sword froze so hard that the blade snapped when he tried to use it. And the others smelled the hot blood in him and came silent on his trail, stalking him with packs of pale white spiders, big as hounds.
The other's mission may be as simple as to ensure the last hero never reaches the children again, that there's no salvation for men this time. They've surrounded Bloodraven's cave with whites as well, perhaps as a further defense against the hero making his way to them. While humans regard the last hero as a legend of great accomplishments, for the others he would be their great other, their version of the Night King. A demon who ended their ambitions, a monster with a sword that destroys them at a touch, and is tireless, fearless. Makes sense that if they thought they found this person, they'd bring a huge number of themselves for their duel. It's fear that made them be so cautious of Waymar. Fear that they had found their true enemy once again, the demon of the Bleeding Star, a monster made of salt and smoke with a blazing sword, and they are running out of time to find this person before it's too late. Question remains, when they eventually find this person, what will they do with them? We've seen a failure for their tests, a quick, brutal death. What about a success? Will they kill him again? Hold John hostage? Convert him into the new King of Winter? Parade his undying body in front of their armies? We may yet find out as the winds of winter blows and the White Wolf finally howls. Thank you very much for watching. Hope you enjoyed this look at the death of Waymar Royce. There will be a follow-up Q&A stream in the next few days here on my channel. Link to the stream will be in the description and the end slides. Now, let's give credit where it is due. As usual, to George R. R. Martin for his wonderful world he created that gives us so much to talk about. To the voice you heard reading the quotes on this video, Mr. Woodhouse, who you may know from the subreddits Destiny the Game and R Gaming, and from his work on Gamepedia. He helped me write and edit the original version of this essay, and couldn't have been done without him. You can find him on Twitter, at Mr. Woodhouse. And to Sanrixian, who provided much of the art in this video. You can find more of her work on Sanrixian.com or on Twitter, at Sanrixian. And to all my patrons on Patreon, you can see their names in the description. Your support of me in this channel helps keep this content coming. Can find that at patreon.com/joemagician, where you can get access to videos early, get custom artwork from the videos, shoutouts in the videos, Patreon exclusive content, and more. In the future, you can expect to see videos on the Three Witches of Macbeth in A Song of Ice and Fire with Shakespeare of Thrones, and then some spooky ideas with my Maester Monthly co-host Bookshelf Stud. You can always find more from me on WordPress at clankingdragon.wordpress.com, Watchers on the Wall, Reddit, Maester Monthly, and on Twitter at JoeMagician42. Links to all of those in the description. Thank you again.